Welcome, everyone. We're about to begin with Hashem, Shia for Women, Shia number 56. The Torah sages were very scrupulous about honesty in money matters, and we need to follow their footsteps. It's brought down that Rav Hananya was a honey merchant. One time he accidentally sold a customer date honey instead of bees honey. A little time later, the customer returned, and Rav Hananya offered to return the money because he gave him the wrong merchandise. Now, the customer refused to accept the refund because he said he actually preferred the date honey that was given to him. But Rav Hananya nevertheless felt he had come by the money dishonestly, and he donated it to a Torah institution. Now, it would have been very easy for Rav Hananya to rationalize that the money is rightfully his, that he did not intentionally give the wrong merchandise, and the buyer was actually pleased with what he received. But he had that absolute honesty in his mind to remove all rationalizations. Now, I'm curious, just reading this, halachically, what's the real halacha here? If he sold in the wrong merchandise, but the customer was Meichel B'Lev Shalom and overlooked it, could very well be that Mitzad Hadin, there was a Mechila, and yes, he sold him the wrong merchandise, but he was happy with it at the end, and it worked out well, and he doesn't have the Chiv to do what he did. Whether yes or no, that's a halachic authority to decide that, but it seems that he would perhaps not have the chiyuv. But nevertheless, you see from this story how scrupulous a person is in his business dealings. You have a similar story of Rav Huna. Initially, he had a sharecropper who basically took. He was stealing. He was taking more than the allotted amount. So to even things out, Rav Huna withheld some of his payment. And then Rav Huna suffered a severe loss where his wine spoiled. And his colleague told him that happened because you withheld some of the sharecropper's pay. And Rav Huna complained, "What do you mean? He was stealing from me. I was just taking what's mine." And the colleague answered that it doesn't justify withholding the payment if you stole it, because agoinim and aganif, right? You're stealing. If you steal from a thief, you're also a thief. The right thing would have done was give him the full payment and take him to the Torah for the theft that he did. But the bottom line of these two stories is it's easy to rationalize our behavior, and we may take the law into our own hands when we feel someone cheated us, and we really need to work on that honesty aspect, not to be swayed by rationalizations when it comes to honesty in business dealings, but also in honesty when it comes to yourself with your physical desires of things. You know, rationalizing, you're very, very hungry and you want to rationalize something's kosher because you're hungry. Or things like that. So that's one aspect of being honest pertaining to your business dealings and your money. Then he brings down just a personal dignity aspect of things. Of Shlomo Zalman Orbach, who is very well known to have a tremendous amount of kavod habriyos, and he was extremely careful to respect each person's dignity. And prior to giving a lecture, a Gemara shir in the yeshiva, he would study Musar that related to Kavod, to giving honor to a person. And the reason for this, he explained, is that because when he's in a shir, he's giving a shir on a very intricate, difficult Gemara, let's say, and a Talmud may interrupt with a foolish question and basically shter or derail his train of thought. And the knee-jerk reaction, Shlomo Zalman says, if I'm in the middle of thinking something and giving something over and I get a foolish question and it derails me, that I would dismiss the question or say, I would say the question's off mark or don't interrupt me, and it would be humiliating for the Talmud. So as a result of me learning Musa beforehand, I'm able to restrain and respond, you know, we'll get to that point later and continue the discussion without embarrassing the student. So this preparation of being aware of what human nature could sometimes do to a person, and to daven and to prepare and to work on it beforehand is a beautiful thing. If Theodore Shlomo Zalman did something like that. In regard to Rav Nachman, he brings also an idea is that we learn from tzaddikim. Now, what he doesn't say here is, I think there are two types of tzaddikim. There are indeed tzaddikim that have certain types of souls where they don't have the ups and down struggles as much as an average person. They're on a different plane altogether in that sense. But there are truly great, great, great tzaddikim that experience a tremendous amount of spiritual ascents and descents, a lot of ups and downs, roller coaster. Reb Nachman from Breslov was one of those tzaddikim. There were many, many, many of them throughout the generation where his internal life spiritually was a roller coaster. A tzaddik yisai olam, but a roller coaster. Up and downs. What to do, what not to do. And they're very open and frank about, and Reb Nachman himself, and Reb Nosson recorded it, of his struggles as a tzaddik, but real strong struggles of upward and downward, which means basically is that tzaddikim like that relate very much. It may be a different plane like us. We can't go to reach their ankles, but the struggle aspect of it, they're very familiar with. And therefore, they have the ability to instruct us on how to strengthen ourselves in all situations. Because they have this lifelong skill, and we can learn from them. We can learn from them to pick ourselves up from the darkest spiritual night and bring us to a higher place. And Reb Nachman's teachings talks about it. There's a lot of Sefri Hasidus that talk about it. The Tanya in Perek Chavav and Perek Chav Zayin talks about it. So this is an important lesson to try to learn from Svarim or from Tzaddikim that discuss and touch upon the struggles of spiritual struggles that we have and to learn from them. In regarding to back to reclaiming dignity, there's a essay here called Defining Our Humanity by someone, Michal Horowitz, and explains the concept of a human being that Hashem created. L'ruach memalala, Targum says, as a spoken word. Speech is what defines humanity. And too much speech is not a good thing. Because what happens is if we idly chatter away, more words we post on social networking and emails and the web, we're more prone to error, more prone to misunderstanding or insult, both to ourselves and to others. That doesn't mean you become an introvert. That doesn't mean that you have to weigh every single thing like that you barely say a word. No. What it means, though, is that you have to put thought into it. Our tongue moves so freely, it's easy to become lax and saying whatever comes in mind, whether it's appropriate or not. It's a famous story about Rav Shimon Gamliel and his servant Tavi. I thought it was Rav Gamliel himself that had Tavi, but Rav Shimon Gamliel sent his servant Tavi to the marketplace to buy the best piece of meat, and Tavi came home with a tongue. And then Rosh Hashanah Gamliel told him again, now buy me the worst piece of meat, and this time too, Tavi brought home a tongue. Rosh Hashanah Gamliel was perplexed, and Tavi explained, "My master, this is the best, and this is the worst. When the tongue is good, there's nothing better. When the tongue is bad, there's nothing worse." The idea being that Judaism, Yiddishkeit, believes that words per se is the most powerful weapon Hashem provided man. The Torah believes in the power of the mind and the majesty of the word. Through the word, Hashem created the world. Hashem did not need words to create the worlds, but he chose words as an instrument of creation to teach us that we create worlds through our word, and we could destroy worlds through our word. That is why Judaism, and the Chafetz Chaim brings it down, is so strongly admonishing us in regard to Lashon Hara and evil speech overall, and about Shvuos and Nedarim, and to be careful how you speak. It's extremely important. In medieval Hebrew, the name for man was called Midaber, the speaker. The Torah believes in the potency of a word, and therefore you use your words to open your mouth in holiness, in purity, in singing to Hashem, in blessing Hashem, praising Hashem, glorifying Him and His Malchus, and also for Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, to encourage and to teach wisdom and to give chizik. So that is speech. Speech falls into the realm of tznius. Speaking properly is a tznius. We always associate, of course, tznius in terms with that it's a woman's mitzvah pertaining to clothing. And we make a mistake that tznius is only about the length of a skirt, the length of a shirt sleeve, the width of a blouse collar, the height of the heels, the color of the shoes. And yeah, sometimes women and men for that matter must dress modestly as befitting a Bas Yisrael and a Ben Taira, yes. But nevertheless, we have to cover these other areas in our lives that are about being a Tzenua that does not have to do necessarily about dress. Like talking loudly on a cell phone, publicly on the phone, you could dress as sneeze as possible. But you're talking loud and everyone's hearing your information. That's a lack of tznius. It has nothing to do with clothing. We always go back to the Micha, Perek, Vav, Pasik, Ches. That Hashem wants Vahatzne Leches Amalekecha. So the tzion says, what does Vahatzne mean? B'loshen tznius v'hester. It means concealment. We bring by the Arias, it's fascinating. They had these fabric paneling that covered the top of the Mishkan. And they joined five pieces of clothing with panels themselves and another six by themselves. And they folded the sixth cloth over the front of the tent and hanged over. And why was the sixth panel folded over the front of the tent? The sixth Yeria, Rashi explains right there, Doimala Kalitznua Hamachusa Batsif Alpanawa. It resembles a modest bride who covers her face with her veil. What is holy is to be covered. And that is the idea. What is holy is to be covered. Not that there's something shameful beneath, but there's something precious beneath. That we're going to get into a different time more. But that's the idea. Same thing with speech. When you're speaking purely and cleanly and honorably, you are respecting the holiness of yourself. And that is a very important point here. Profanity in a secular workplace is not just when you're angry or stressed. It's the way you talk. The way when things go wrong, when things go right. Whether you use nivel peh, whether you use off-color jokes, whether you use sexual references in your off-color jokes. Whether you speak in a crude manner, not in a crude manner. And that is the Shulchan Kodesh brings it down. What you're really doing is your mouth is a palace. And basically by speaking in that negative way, you're putting a sewage into that palace. That is what it is. You are refined. You are refined. You are modest. You are careful. And it goes way, way beyond clothing. And then there's a essay here, which also we're not going to get into now, about social media. And how nothing is private anymore and everything is open. And that's also a problem in our society, in ourselves. We really need to be careful. I'm not going to go on a platform here about social media. But the idea is, people once asked, you know, if it's not on social media, did it actually happen? You know, like, for example, this idea of, let's say you are finally on a vacation and you're alone. And you go out, you're in a cottage, it's a beautiful scenery out there. It's like late spring, early summer, it's pleasant, it's beautiful. And you wake up very early and you're watching a beautiful sunset. So it's not a sunset and it's not a beautiful sunset unless you have a selfie with yourself and have a picture of the sun as it's coming up. Or maybe if you have another friend with you and then you do it together and it's a whole spiel. It takes away the experience. But when you go alone without any phone and you just go out there when it's dark and you view it and you see it and you're enamored with it and it's just you and Hashem manifesting itself, Hashem's glory in the sunrise. That's a beautiful private experience. But in our culture, that doesn't exist. How do you know that you went? You have to prove that you went or that you to prove that you experienced it. That itself takes away from the experience. So that is idea of a lack of tznius is a lack of inwardness. The inwardness is healthy. It gets you to be yourself. It gets you to be comfortable with yourself. True tznius is not about suppression or repression. It's about being aligned with yourself. Being internal and truly loving yourself and appreciating you for who you are without any type of external trappings. And that's the best bracha that you can ask for when you are your true self. And that is often concealed from people, not because it's shameful, but because it's precious. Bracha v'atzlacha.